This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is drummer and band leader Matt Wilson.
Sir, or speak to him with less distinction of manner. Hey, why don't you go back where you came from? If an elephant knocks on your door and asks for something to eat, there are two things to say. Tell him there's nothing in the house but cold victuals and he'll do better next door. Or say, we have nothing but 6 bushels of potatoes. Will that be enough for your breakfast, sir?
This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio Matt Wilson. How you doing?
Thank you, John. Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. It's great to be back in Missoula. Great to be back in Montana.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful.
Well, great to have you on board with us. We're also joined by Missoula, Montana drummer and percussionist Ed Stalling, who's going to be in on the interview. How you doing, Ed?
Good I'm doing great. It's All good right. to be here.
Yeah,
good to have Matt
I'm surrounded.
In town and in the state. Yeah.
Surrounded by drummers here. I'm outnumbered. 13 recordings under his own name. And, oh, I should also mention MattWilsonJazz.com is the name of Matt's website. Terrific website.
Thank you.
Well laid out. All kinds of good stuff going on there. And Honey and Salt, music inspired by the poetry of Carl Sandburg, is the most recent recording. We'll be talking about that as well as some other recordings and everything that went into that. Countless awards, including 2018 Musician of the Year and Record of the Year for Honey and Salt. I'm trying to remember what organization that was. It was
the Jazz Journalist Association.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A bit of a, can we say a cover boy? Like, am I going to make you blush? A little bit.
Yeah, I suppose.
But,
yeah,
in the best sense.
It's been an honor to have to have that.
Yes, you know, in the best sense of the word. Yeah, downbeat, jazz is, modern drummer, jazz times, et cetera, all kinds of great coverage for the work that you've been doing. If I may name drop a few folks here of musicians that you've collaborated with on many levels, Herbie Hancock, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Diane Reeves, Chris Bode, who has been on our program, Wynton Marsalis, Randy Brecker, Nels Klein, who has also been on Musician Spotlight, Pat Metheny has been on our program.
Beautiful.
We mentioned earlier that technically I think your music may have been on the program when we featured Dina DeRose.
Great.
Of course, you've collaborated with on many occasions. Bill Frizzell, who he's one that got away. He was in town, and he got away from me. So I don't know if he was running away from me.
Just a quick pace, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps so. I just couldn't keep up with him. So he got away. So let's hear a little bit about the mischievous Midwestern boy from Knoxville, Illinois. Not Tennessee.
Yeah.
Illinois. Tell us about, Knoxville, Illinois. Just kind of give us a taste of what that's about, and then let's get into the mischief.
Well, fellas, let me tell you. Knoxville is a small farming community in West Central Illinois, Knox County, next to Galesburg. Galesburg is where Carl Sandburg was born. My high school, for example, we had a really good music program, and 40 years earlier that I graduated, Armando Gatala, who was the principal trumpetist of the Boston Symphony for many years, was there, graduated. And Ray Kramer, who was director of bands at IU, Indiana University, for many years, went to school there. So there's a legacy of people from there and that area in general, some musicians and other people, artist-wise. And so I kindly refer to that area as an now that I'm older, too, especially as an agricultural area with a capital C, you know, that there was a lot of culture going on.
Wow.
And we heard a lot of music. So I had a friend in high school. And I was 15, he was 16 when we were doing this particular week. We saw Clark Terry in the Quad Cities. We drove 50 miles south 2 days later and saw Dizzy Gillespie. And we drove down to the University of Illinois later that week and saw Oscar Peterson play solo.
Wow.
This is in 1 week.
Man.
I was just at Drum Coffee, and they have a Luigi blend, which is for Louis Belson. Louis Belson's from Moline, Illinois. So I pointed that out to the young lady today at the coffee shop when I was just there. And I said, no, I knew Mr. Belson, you know, and he was a supporter of mine when I was a kid. And so it's a nice area to grow up in for that. Yeah.
So you know, in that kind of setting, you know, what drew you into music? I mean, you know, the agriculture is one thing, but.
By the way, I heard Matt describe it once as the land of, was it corn, soybean, and corn, soybean, and free jazz.
Yeah, yeah. I always refer to Knoxville as the avant-garde jazz center of West Central Illinois. But what really got me into things was I saw Buddy Rich on television, you know, when he would be on Tonight Show. But prior to that, when I was very young, he was on an episode of The Lucy Show.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I should just tell for our younger listeners, this was The Lucy Show.
Lucille Ball.
Yeah, Lucille Ball pretty much defined comedy in the 50s on television.
And then there was different eras of the show. This would have been early 70s.
Oh, okay. All
this
right,
would have been
sure.
1970.
That's right.
I was in second grade, I believe, when I saw that show. And then that really got me in, that really just seeing it. And the same friend that we went to see stuff with, we would listen to records together. And he had this record called Rich versus Roach. So I heard Mr. Roach on Sing, 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 the great Louis Prima classic, of course, made famous by Benny Goodman. But Buddy plays, of course, Fleur Things. And I heard Mr. Roach plays over the form. I didn't know that at that point. But he played with accompaniment, with the bass accompaniment. So that's something that I heard, and my ears perked up. And that was one of those moments, the beginning of my, what I call it to tell my students and tell people my sonic story, was that moment, that summer. I can remember where we were in my friend Jay Litchfield's room. It was too hot to be outside. We were listening to these records, and my ears just perked up. And we listened to it again, and it really, it was the first time I heard someone really sing on the drums to me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. Matt Wilson is joining us here along with Ed Stalling. So where did the mischievousness come in? Musically mischievous a little bit, sounds like.
You know, I think part of it, gentlemen, was that I had good private teachers, John Larson, actually Adam Larson's father, was my teacher as a kid, and again, my band director Charlie Knapp is a great guy. But I come from my mother was very imaginative, and my father and my brothers, so we would do all kinds of different kinds of things, scheme and come up with projects and do all kinds of things. My mom was really active in a lot of different things. So I think we tried things, we did things. My dad had a great saying. He used to say, "Let's do something even if it is wrong." So I've kind of lived by that.
Wow.
You know, like, let's try it, you know. And I have, what you do is with this project that I'm playing with in town tonight, you surround yourself with people that will do that with you, you know, lift you. You gain their trust, and all of a sudden, you know, they're like, "Oh yeah, let's do this." You know, they look at you, maybe they look at you kind of crazy. Like Jeff Letter, for example, is one of my prime collaborators, but everybody in this particular group. And you know, you just do that. So you try things, and I've always, part of it, I think, was not knowing. So not knowing that I had, for example, not knowing that I had to subscribe to a certain era of jazz and be only that. Even though I love all these different eras, I love swing. I'm one of the biggest, to me, anthropology freaks or history freaks of the music. But I thought it was all of it, and I was playing all kinds of music at that point too. So I just like taking it all in. So I think that's where, you know, mischief. And I tried things. You know, I wasn't afraid to be animated or funny or do crazy things, you know. So, yeah, I think that's where that comes from a lot.
Okay, great. Let's dive into the most recent recording project, Honey and Salt. But I think Ed was maybe the one who turned me on to this project a little while ago. Talk to us a little bit about how this project came together. And, you know, one of the things I came across in your promotional material, I like this. It has some collision, some rub. Music isn't all flowers and candy. It has to have some edge to it.
Yeah. I feel like that, all that way with all, you know, with all the projects sort of, the things that I think about is, you know, people ask me a lot about the humor, you know, in what I do. But I always say, if you can make people laugh, you have a lot more chance of opening them up to be vulnerable to cry if you can make them laugh. If everything's just the same, it would be like going to hear a band that only plays the same dynamic or the same tempo. You know, you want to have a range of things. So the history of this was my geographical connection. There's also a kind of a roundabout family connection to Mr. Sandberg, and that my great aunt, was married to Carl Sandburg's first cousin, Charlie Kranz. So we had a different kind of connection. So, as a matter of fact, one of the pieces we do on the record, Prairie Barn, he says something about Mr. Sandberg visits there and says, "Charlie, the old barn on the place, how's it doing?" That's my Uncle Charlie, you know, in that poem.
Wow.
Yeah. And in his biography of Always a Young Stranger, which is the biography of his youth, he talks a lot about his cousin Charlie. So there's that connection too. So that gave, for example, Life magazine came back and with to Galesburg with Mr. Sandberg once and did a photo, you know, piece on it. Shows him doing a concert, shows him doing a reading. But they show him going out to the house and sitting with Aunt Emma. She had made a cake, and he's slicing the cake. And my mom and dad never got to meet him when he was in town there with him. But my mom always bragged that we got to eat off the same, you know, plates and drink coffee out of the same cups as Carl Sandburg. So it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So I had that kind of connection. Just like everything when you're young, one of the things you want to do when you're in an area is get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, you want to shed that and get to wherever you want to do. And then I think when you leave there and you start to realize how deep your connection was to your roots. So in college, I wrote a paper on Mr. Sandberg, and then that's when I discovered the jazz connection. I didn't realize that, you know, in high school class. He wrote two jazz poems, one of which we do on the recording, A Snatch of Slip-Worn Jazz. And then when I moved to Brooklyn is when I bought a book one day at a used bookstore and started reading through these. And I thought, I really connect to this reading. So my first record as a leader, As Wave Follows Wave, which will be next year, the 25th anniversary of that recording. Then I got a Chamber Music America grant in 2001. And that's when I sort of had written most of the body of this music. But since that time, I've written a lot of them. Then we just were waiting for a time to sort of make the record. And this piece sort of became the time to have it all aligned and make the record.
are people so near nothing, they are everywhere without being seen. There are people so eager to be seen, they nearly always manage to be seen. There are people who want to be everywhere at once, and they seem to get nowhere. There are people who have been seen anywhere, and they are less anxious about it than those who have been everywhere. Could it be people are be so near to nothing, they might be so humble as to say, we go everywhere without being seen, and it comes right easy on us. Could it be there are people who have never been seen anywhere? And they ask people who have been seen everywhere, how does it feel to be seen everywhere? So near nothing, they are everywhere without being seen. There are people so eager to be seen, they nearly always manage to be seen. There are people who want to be everywhere at once, and they seem to get nowhere. There are people who have been seen anywhere, and they are less anxious about it than those who have been everywhere. Could it be people are be so near to nothing, they might be so humble as to say, we go everywhere without being seen, and it comes right easy on us. Could it be there are people who have never been seen anywhere, and they ask people who have been seen everywhere, how does it feel to be seen everywhere?
You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by drummer, percussionist, band leader, composer Matt Wilson. I'm going to bring Ed in here on this discussion. How would you describe Ed Stalin joining us here in Missoula, Montana, drummer, percussionist? How would you describe this project of his to the average listener who's not familiar with what happens? You know, like, and you're trying to bring in someone not fellow musicians or jazz heads. But just kind of like as you listen to it, it's just hit you. You're real good at kind of just, you know, bringing music into other people, I think, that might be unusual to their ears.
Sure. Well,
not that it's that unusual.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I've been listening to Matt for a long time, decades, actually. And the way I talk about Matt and most of his projects, prepare for the unexpected, right? I mean, that's, I think, the experience. And no matter what they listen to from Matt, I think it's about that unexpectedness. When I think of Matt, I have a student that's 17 years old, and one of the things I do in my own lessons is listening. I put a listening homework assignment, pick a different drummer, and just recently I chose Matt for one. It was off of Dina DeRose, I think it was The Laughing.
Laughing at Life.
Laughing at Life. And then I have them write up for every moment of the song, what are they thinking, what are they feeling? And this student came back, and I think you'll appreciate this, Matt. He goes, when I first started listening to it as a jazz standard, I expected it to be boring. And he said, and all of a sudden, wow, everything was unexpected and everything surprised me. But I think when I think of Matt and his music, it's the element of surprise and it's the unexpected.
Thank you.
I think that's really what comes to mind in so many of your projects. And so I was wondering, like, where does that come from? Is that, you mentioned a little bit about growing up and your family and your parents seem to have that as... Is that something that you think is largely innate, or is it something you work on as well?
I think it was a gift to be having that kind of openness, you know. And I think part of it was having to do a bunch of different things and finding ways to contribute, and also I was around some people that, you know, I've been around some highly, really creative people, and I've been always drawn to people that want to do things, look at things slightly askew or a little bit differently. I went to a great university program, Wichita State University, J.C. Combs, and I went to this summer program sponsored by the Ludwig Drum Company in the summer of 81, I believe. We did a piece with professional wrestlers and percussion ensemble. We did a piece with cloggers. We did a piece with pinball machines.
Time out. Let's go back for a second. Yeah. I want to make sure I understand that correctly. Professional wrestlers.
Yeah, it's a piece by Walter Mays called War Games. It's a concerto for percussion ensemble and professional wrestlers. Yeah.
Outstanding.
So I'm in touch with him weekly, at least, you know, if not, you know, a couple times a month. But still, he's, you know, so I've been around these people that, you know, that looked at things differently. And I have a saying that says, sometimes I use a different word, but I'll be cool. I'll say, well, my stuff may be stupid, but at least it's my stupid. Mm-hmm. And but at the same time, I'm very, I think it surprises folks sometimes about how rooted I am in especially in the tradition of jazz and the tradition of jazz drumming. I'm a real, you know, but
absolutely.
I think for a lot of times, for me, the people that are that way are the ones that really have checked out a lot of different things and experienced it. Mm-hmm. So I was just always drawn to trying things and being in those settings. So, and also serving the music at the highest level possible. So yes. Whatever's called upon, you know, I try to do that with what I can do, you know. And so that's been nice. But yeah, the unexpected, that's what we kind of live for. What I try to do with bands is have it be organized enough and together enough that those things can happen. So, you know, I just welcome it. You know, I just welcome the musicians to go those places. But you still have to have, you know, direction. You know, you want to know. So it's kind of a combination of organization and allowing them the music to emerge from that. So I'm a firm believer too in details, because details welcome things to be open. So it's a combination of both.
We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight and our visit with Matt Wilson. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight and our conversation with Matt Wilson. listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by drummer, percussionist, band leader, composer Matt Wilson, as well as drummer and composer. And sometimes, have you been a band leader, Ed Stalling?
Actually, I don't think I have.
Well, we'll have to look into that.
I'm sorry, guys. Starting tonight.
Ed Stalling joining us here along with Matt Wilson. I guess maybe one of the things that we should mention to folks when we're doing this interview is, as we are recording this in we're now kind of leaning towards late January 2020. We're speaking to Matt and Ed just after Matt has done a performance in Helena, Montana. And as we are recording this, he's going to be performing at the Downtown Dance Collective in Missoula. Of course, by the time this airs, those performances will be in wonderful ethers. And
yes.
The spirit will be out there.
It will still be swearing about that.
I wasn't – it's unexpected. I wasn't expecting this.
Yes.
I want to get back just a little bit deeper into Honey and Salt, and particularly using the actual words of Carl Sandburg and how you went about doing that in a couple different ways.
Yeah, that was one of the challenges of it. Well, how I did it basically is I would get the collections – and I'd make copies, and I'd just take them with me when I was traveling and flying or whatever, and just read them a lot. And then so I would write notes. I still have some of those pages. Like Choose, for example, came immediately. It was like a march, you know, and this became this. And Anywhere, Everywhere, People, it spoke to me immediately. So some of them came, and some of them were ones that I workshopped and tried. But they all sort of – they fell together. That was the aspect of it to me, is not to have it be all – particularly all the same. And it's actually been just as free or opens up like any of the other bands.
Matt Wilson joining us here on Musicians Spotlight. And we are also joined, as I've been mentioning, by Ed Stalling. And Ed, I know you had some other stuff to bring into the discussion here.
Related to the setup, I'm curious, Matt, one of the things I've heard you talk a lot about is removing the moat being that space between the stage and the audience.
Yes.
and how that can get in the way and the different ways to do that.
Yeah, one of the ways we do it with this project is that we have people from the community read the poems that people have done. So there's about five of them that we have folks do.
Okay.
And when we did the Chicago Festival, his name escapes me, a little beat, from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, yeah.
He was great. You know, we've had all kinds of people, but, you know, just community folks from where, and that's been a really beautiful thing. So that breaks that down. And just the connection to the people, you know, I think they see... It's genuine too. We're honest, very honest about this, that we're obviously in that moment enjoying each other, what's happening. And vulnerability, I think, is the biggest one. A lot of people just don't display vulnerability sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't mean to interrupt, but I know that Ed's brought that up a number of times when we've been watching jazz musicians, that there's this coolness that sometimes, particularly younger players, feel like that they have to project that and have to show the seriousness of the music.
Yeah.
And that there's like this wall that kind of gets put
up. I'm not even sure if it's I kind of see it all across the board sometimes too. You know, there's just some people that really let you in.
In those big venues, I've heard you talking about even just the lighting in terms of making sure you can see their eyes, the people in the front row. Because in those big venues, obviously, you can just see the lights. You don't even see the people out there.
Yeah, you walk out and you don't see anybody. So just having even if you ask just to have them come up a little bit. You know, like remember when Carol Burnett used to come out and ask for questions, he'd have people that bring the light up in the audience just to see their faces, you know? Yeah, I think that helps take away the moat. And, you know, you get some hassle for it. I mean, you know, sometimes jazz people, I'm going to pick on it a little bit. Like, well, you know, you got to do this and do this. And I don't know. I'm 55. I don't have to really – I don't want to adhere to any of that now.
We can all relate to that here at the stable.
Yeah, but I mean –
that age.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, if I'm playing for somebody and that – I know what serves the music too. I don't go – that's selfish to do that. It's selfless to go in and to be totally committed to that song and to those people. I just like the feeling of – no matter what it is, it's alive at that moment. It's about the people. You know, we play with people. We don't play style. We play with people. So it's the spirit of the people that inspire you.
La la la.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by drummer and composer and band leader Matt Wilson. We're also joined today by drummer and composer and percussionist Ed Stalling of Missoula, Montana. A lot of things that we've been talking about today, obviously we've been digging in deep to Honey and Salt, the most recent recording project, and just touching base on a lot of your kind of general philosophies on music. One project in particular that I did want to ask you about that is very special and near and dear to your heart, and that is Beginning of a Memory. And I wanted to just ask you if we could talk about that a little bit. I mean, this is a very personal thing for you, I love that you're willing to share about this.
Well, part of the reason that a lot of this, you know, talk about permission and talk about the ability to try things was I had a great partner, you know, wife. Well, we were together 5 years. We met in 1982 at college, and then we were together 5 years before we got married. So we were married. We got married in 1987. She was diagnosed with leukemia in 2010. And so it was a pretty tumultuous 3.5-4 years. She passed away June 15th of 2014. So what I did wanted to do was she had songs that she loved from all the different records and all the different bands. So I thought, well, if I just get everybody together, and we didn't arrange these. We did this in the studio. There was some overdubbing. I think Gary Versace overdubbed and Chris Lightcap overdubbed. But Terrell, Andrew D'Angelo, Jeff Lederer, Joel Fromm, Martin, Paul Sakibi, we were all in the studio all at the same time, and we just did these songs, just in the moment. Like, just we had the sheets, and the arrangements were just done. So that's why Big Happy Family is just like, wow, the interpretation is done mutually in the moment. And it was really joyful. And so I thought that was maybe one of the best ways to sort of – my wife was a great violinist. She was from Tulsa, Felisa Griffin, and then Felisa Wilson. She was a great violinist, and we met at Wichita State. And then she did her master's at New England Conservatory, so we moved to Boston, and then we lived there until 92. We moved there 87 to 92, then we were in New York. We moved to New York in 92. So She was a lover of all kinds of music, and she was doing projects with me too. Later, improvising, and she got braver about it. We did a concert years ago for Jazz Composers Collective, and she was basically in tears prior because she thought I was going to make her do like a bunch of jazz kind of things. I said, "No, you're just going to improvise. You know, you're an improviser. You know what to do." So she was really getting into it. She was doing stuff with Jeff, with his wife playing on some string quartet stuff of that and everything like that. So she was really getting into that. And we did quartet with strings. We did Newport in 10, August of 10, right before, a couple months before she was diagnosed, actually. So we did, that was Kurt Konefki and myself and Paul Sakibi doing that gig, Lightcap was available, with the quartet, and it was string quartet. And that was picked one of the best things of that particular year of Newport. Started the Sunday afternoon, and it was really great. So she was really getting into that spirit of that. So she was able to come back and do that. We did a concert in 2011. It was her first time playing after she had a stem cell transplant, which would have been March 15th of 2011. This was August of 2011. She played the concert at the Litchfield Jazz Festival. And the first time she played the violin since that she had really been even diagnosed, or maybe played a little bit, but that whole thing after the transplant was at that rehearsal that day prior to playing. And everybody just couldn't believe how great she was playing. But she said, "Why am I going to? I want to save it for the moment when we're playing the music, not practice." So she did it, and it was fantastic. So I'm trying to get some of that stuff put out because we have a recording of that concert. WEGO recorded it in Boston, so I'm trying to get that. See if I can get that put out because it's really great. But yeah, that was a nice feeling, and just to collect all those friends together that knew her too. Larry Goldings did a solo piano piece of one of my pieces. Yosuke Inoue recorded a bass solo from Japan and sent it because he was in the quartet. So it was a nice way to pay tribute to her.
I was going
to
say, it's a beautiful way to pay tribute to her.
So yeah, and then she played violin on Humidity. She plays on a couple pieces on Humidity. One called Swimming in the Trees and one called Beginning of a Memory, actually. She plays violin on that. So that's one reason we re-recorded that song. ¶¶
Matt, one of the things that I came across that I thought was really a very cool way of thinking of things, and Ed, I want you to kind of chime in on this too and get your take on it. The concept of viewing, if I hope I'm getting this right, viewing musicians as characters, not mm-hmm. technicians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I look at yeah.
Because I certainly think along those same lines, too. I hadn't put it in those kind of words.
But, oh, yeah. But and characters, you know, characters, I mean, sometimes you say, oh, someone's a character. It's not necessarily derogatory, but it makes them seem – but to me, the greatest artists in any of the era are characters, you know. Mm-hmm. Not only, you know, they're eccentric, you know, Thelonious Monk or Bob Dylan or, you know, or George Clinton or, you know, Al Green. I mean, they're everybody.
Prince.
You know, Prince.
Yeah.
I mean,
met
Prince.
Your buddy Rich. He was,
yeah. Yeah. Michael Jackson. You know, I sure. mean, characters. And so, yeah, when I look, when I look over at Led, you know, Letter, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, character. Or Nadia's with us. She's a character. We were just laughing so hard in the van today. And Don Clement, character. Marty, character. You know, Terrell Stafford. You know, a character. Ron Miles does a lot of stuff with me. Character. Gary Versace. Larry Goldings. The list goes on. They have these personalities. And so, mm-hmm. like I said, Marcel Duchamp said, I don't believe in art. I believe in artists. And I sort of feel the same way about music. I really believe in music, but it's the people it's the human moments, you know, that you're there with them. Or even when you're not doing the music, those other moments that you have with them that are just beautiful, the time spent with them, you know, the stories, the laughter. We lost Jimmy Heath last week. I was just thinking about these late night hangs I had with Jimmy Heath a few times where I woke up one time. We were there. We were doing the Iowa City Jazz Festival, and the Heath brothers were there. And we stayed up till 3 or 3:30 in the morning. And the next day, Steve Carden, the great guitarist, and I were like, does your stomach hurt? Do we eat something? We realized we were laughing so hard from Jimmy and Tootie about everything that our stomachs were just laughing and laughing and laughing. And so you'll remember those moments. I'll remember those moments of those gentlemen and whomever, you know, Mary McPartland, folks like that too. I didn't ever get to play with, but see, you know, all these kind of great artists. You remember them for their music, but you also remember the characters that they were, what they brought to the art form that was their personalities. You know? That's being fearless too. If you're really who you are, you're a character, right?
That's true. That's
my
true.
Daughter was just in a show. Yeah, my daughter was just in a show, a new reading of a new musical last week called The Tattoo Lady, and one of the messages of this show was, it's better to be odd than ordinary.
you might be familiar with the musician Bruce Coburn. So yeah. The trouble with normals, it only gets worse.
That's right. That's right. One time, I have four children. I have a daughter who's 22. She's a musical theater major. She'll be 22 in a few weeks. And my son, I have triplet sons. They're 18. They're all in college right now. But I remember years ago, we were sitting at dinner, and I was saying something about something I was wanting to do or just something we were coming up with. And one of my sons goes, Dad, you're weird. and my wife said, honey, your dad makes a living because he's weird. So, you know, now my kids are really into all this. They you know, they're 18. They understand now that they like the eccentric aspects of all this. So they're down with it. They're like, Dad, yeah, it's a
good
project.
They're 18. It seems like yesterday you were on the cover of Modern Drummer with all three of them, right?
Yeah.
Sitting on your drums, I think. It's the last baby.
So they'll be
diapers.
19 in April, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, the freshman in college and Audrey's will graduate in May.
I love the whole thing about characters, but I've heard Matt talk about he doesn't do concerts and he doesn't do gigs. He does events. Everything's an event.
Yeah.
And you think about that. It doesn't matter how small a venue you're playing. There's only a handful of people. This is still an event. I'm going to make this an event. And it's a game changer.
Yeah. You know, and again, it's allowed me to get a chance to do it in a lot of different settings, in a lot of different places, and with a lot of different amazing people. So that kind of I'm glad, some people have not had that. I mean, I was given a gift to be allowed to do that. And some people aren't, you know, some people are like, oh, my parents did this, or I had teachers that said, no, you shouldn't do this. And luckily, if I had those people, I didn't pay much attention when I heard that, or I had a lot of encouragement along the way. So I thank God for that, you know.
MattWilsonJazz.com is the name of Matt Wilson's website. Yeah. As I said earlier, it's a great website. Visit, come and hang out. What is your one of the things? He says, you want to chit chat, hang out for dinner, discuss some world affairs?
Absolutely.
I don't know if you can do that all on the website, but at least
I'll try. Yeah. I get to it eventually. Sometimes it takes a little bit. But
and the most recent recording project is Honey and Salt, music inspired by the poetry of Carl Sandburg. Matt Wilson, thank you so much.
John.
Ed Stalling, thank you so much.
Great to be here. Good to have you, Matt.
What a nice feeling.
Coming here to hang out with us here on Musician Spotlight, and I hope it's not the last time.
Oh, no, it definitely won't be. I love coming back, and it's great to hear you guys' stories, too. You know, that's what we're here for, life is stories. You just gather these stories, and you hope that people get a chance to experience them and hear them and create their own stories. So thank you guys so much.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Matt Wilson. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Today's interview was engineered by Beth Ann Austin. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.